Welcome back to Schneps Connects. I want to remind everyone to please subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to us, on any major podcast network or on our website, podcast.schnepsmedia.com. Today, I'm joined by Molly Egan, who's the CEO of Vision Services for the Blind and Visually Impaired, which is a nonprofit vision rehabilitation and social service organization serving the New York metro area for 100 years. Founded in 1926, Vision supports people of all ages across the spectrum of vision loss, helping them live independent, confident, and connected lives. Each year, the organization serves approximately 8,000 individuals throughout New York City, Long Island, Northern New Jersey, the Hudson Valley, and Rockland County. Visions is also the number one organization in New York State in placing individuals who are visually impaired into jobs. Molly brings extensive leadership experience from organizations including the New York Foundling, Planned Parenthood Federation of America, the Trevor Project, New York Presbyterian Hospital, and the American Red Cross. Her work has consistently focused on access, innovation, and meaningful impact in human services. So Molly, thank you for your time. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Oh, likewise. Thanks so much, Josh.
So I guess I would always love to just ask, how'd you get started in this work? I mean, how did you get this career journey ultimately landing you at Visions?
Well, it's been a journey. That's a good word for it. I mean, I've spent more than 30 years in, I would say, roles in the organizations you mentioned, really with a focus on public health equity. I think way back when I did international adoption work, work with kids in orphanages way back in my 20s, I've always been drawn to purpose-driven work. I think I felt like one's work is time away from the people that we love. And so you better have a great trade-off and focus on improving the lives of other people. So I think that's where it comes from for me.
I love it. I'm sure it's very fulfilling.
It is.
How have some of those experiences really shaped the way you approach your role now as CEO of Visions? And when did you get started there?
So I would say, you know, I was approached about the CEO role at Visions about a year ago, really. I started in July, so I think I can still say I'm the relatively new CEO here.
Sure.
But I was approached, and a couple things gave me a little bit of a double take when I heard about the role. I mean, first of all, that I had been involved in the nonprofit human services space, especially, you know, in New York through the Foundling. And I had never, full disclosure, I had never even heard of Visions. And I had been doing this work for a long, long time. So that gave me a little double take. And also that I personally have macular degeneration of a vision condition, one of the four leading causes of vision loss in this country. And so all of a sudden it felt like this is purpose-driven work like I've done in the past, but very personal to me. So
sure.
That's what got me exploring Visions. I think in terms of your question about kind of how have the roles, you know, come into play, my different roles, I think anybody that tells you that they've figured out how to be a leader and that they've learned everything, you know, there is to be a leader is full of it. It's a lifelong journey and you learn things and you pick up tools along the way. So I had some roles that you described in, you know, Red Cross disaster response or healthcare at the health systems that are very traditional sort of hierarchical command and control type roles. But then a lot of roles at Planned Parenthood, at Trevor, at the Foundling that really did better with kind of collaborative leadership. And so being able to take some of those practices in collaborative leadership and bringing them to the Vision staff where there's such a level of expertise here has served me well and I hope will serve the organization well in the future.
Yeah, that's good advice in terms of always learning. I totally agree with that. So stepping foot into the role, have there been things that have surprised you or even just inspired you that perhaps you weren't anticipating?
More than I could have possibly guessed. And as I said, this is my love and this kind of purpose-driven work, but lots of things. So I think first and foremost, so many people we work with literally say, Visions gave me my life back. And that I mean, that never gets old. What's better than that? I think, a couple of other things that have surprised me and inspired me. This organization has a collective 450 years of vision rehab experience. So the staff here who have been master's level trained in doing the work they do every day have so much experience and so much learning to offer on how to live with vision loss, how to move around with vision loss, how to work in the, in a new field or in your chosen field in a different way, how to age with vision loss. There's just so much experience here. And I think you mentioned it also. I would add a third thing. You mentioned it in the beginning, just understanding that we were more than a decade running number one in the state in helping people get meaningful employment. That was really inspiring. And I had no idea that Visions had such a legacy.
I love it. That's so great to hear. So, I mean, what other services are you providing people that are either blind or visually impaired? I can't go on asking the question without really just saying how, how much we take for granted sometimes in life, the basic thing of seeing vision.
I mean, it's amazing. And I would say I'm still on a learning journey on just how much we do here because it's very participant-centered. We say along the spectrum of vision loss for a reason. It is so different from children who were born blind to young adults who are preparing to go into the workforce or college, who are losing vision, adults in midlife that are trying to understand if they can stay in a chosen field or move jobs, or older adults where vision loss is most prevalent. So, the kinds of things that we do are working in groups and with individuals in their homes on how to cook safely, how to clean, how to navigate in their communities using a white cane or other kinds of devices, and more and more and more in an area of real expertise for Visions is how to use the incredible amount of assistive technology that is emerging in the field and how to leverage that assistive technology to do work, to live your lives, to have different kinds of voice activated tools. It's really about how do we work with you to live the life that you want to live, whatever that is?
Incredible work. Just the other day, I saw someone using what's the appropriate word? Is it considered a cane?
It is, yep, a cane, yep.
To be able to go through the subway system. And I was just amazed. It was really incredible to me how the individual was able to, get around the New York City subway system.
It's amazing. And we encounter folks who are different employers who, even on the workforce side, say, well, how could a blind or low vision person possibly do X kind of job? And somebody who is blind or low vision can do almost anything. And that's something that folks need to learn. I think it was new for me. I think it would be new for a lot of people out there.
So blindness and low vision are often part of a broader health equity conversation. What are some of the key challenges you're seeing today? I could imagine, one of them being, employment or employers looking upon them in some way that they might be challenging to find jobs. But are there other challenges that you're seeing?
I think a big challenge is just exactly what we're talking about is that people just don't know this field, don't know the services that are available to people because losing your vision for a lot of people is highly stigmatized. People I've talked to talk about coming out stories of when they came out, quote unquote, to their employer about how much vision they had lost. So I think a challenge is you're working with people that often are ashamed and stigmatized by vision loss. I think people can sometimes see this as a very niche set of work, but the four leading causes of blindness, glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, cataracts, and macular degeneration, what I have, are all on the rise in this country. And sure, that's partly because the country is aging, but underlying chronic disease also causes vision loss. So this is exploding area. And I think people just aren't aware of it really, and aren't aware of the types of services they can get to help them through it.
So, are there other ways that people are looking at the overall health of people in terms of when it comes down to vision?
Well, for sure. I mean, as you said before, it kind of affects anything. One of the huge things that comes up is when you get into vision loss in older adults, which is of course the most prevalent. Set vision as a loss aside for a minute. People talk about the dramatic health effects of social isolation in older adults. If you add vision loss to that, you are having people that suddenly don't feel safe to, go out, connect with others. That's why our older adult center in Chelsea on 23rd Street is such an amazing, amazing place because we serve breakfast and lunch to people 5 days a week. We have something like 80 classes a week that people who are blind and visually impaired can, from a gym and an exercise class to a knitting class, just everything you can imagine, photography, and try to expose people to new things and limit social isolation that's so pervasive in that community.
That's fantastic. I didn't realize you had that center. That's terrific.
It's quite an amazing place because I believe it might be the only place in the country. Celis Manor is an apartment building where the residents are all blind and visually impaired. And Visions is the service provider that works in partnership that provides all of those services. So a wonderful volunteer corps goes in and can help somebody do their bills or read mail or get signed up for different benefits. And so we're the service provider adjacent to that apartment building on 23rd.
Fantastic. I'm just curious, are there any technologies that are being worked on to help with blindness? I know obviously there's issues related to helping people that are paralyzed, but is there anything that can be done for the eyes or being researched at this time?
Yeah, there are so many. I'm actually going to one of the country's largest assistive technology conferences next month in California that's all just about assistive technology. One of the most familiar ones to folks, which were not developed for people with vision loss, but they're just incredibly handy and life-changing, the Metaglasses. So if you can imagine if you have low vision, or are blind, if you're wearing the Meta glasses and you walk into a restaurant to meet somebody, you can say, Meta, describe the room I'm in, or tell me where a person that meets this description is sitting, or as simple as opening your refrigerator and saying, hey, Meta, where's the mustard to make myself a sandwich? And things that you were unable to do in such a supported way are made easier by the use of the Meta glasses.
Love that. Listen, we hope technology can be used in positive ways for people, for sure.
For sure, and that we can find ways to make it equitable. It's always the kicker is people that have resources can get access to these things, and we want to make sure to have programming to bring these things to everyone.
Let's talk about the centennial. I mean, 100 years is a big deal. Most organizations aren't able to make it that long, and for you to be thriving is terrific to hear. So I hope that you'll be marking the 100 years with some type of celebration or hopefully a way to raise funds. So is there anything you can share in terms of plans?
Oh, absolutely. And I love the question. We are very excited here to turn 100. We are celebrating in a number of different ways. And celebration, I've been fortunate enough to be in an organization in my past work history that turned 100. And what you learn is when you approach a centennial, you celebrate your history and all that you've accomplished and all the people that have brought you there. And then you celebrate what's big on your horizon for the future. So on June 16th of this year, we are hosting a centennial gala in the beautiful, also 100-year-old New York Athletic Club on Central Park South. And that will be a really terrific gathering. But of course, all throughout the centennial year, we'll have different gatherings for participants and parties for the staff and all kinds of things to recognize our centennial.
Terrific. And I know that you have a special keynote speaker. Can you share a little bit about your keynote?
We're just beyond excited. So some folks might know this name, others that don't. Eric Weihenmayer is an adventurer, is a best-selling author of a book called No Barriers. And he is sort of most well known as being the first blind person to scale Mount Everest. He is quite something. He's done, I believe, all the major peaks in the world.
Wow.
If you can imagine, if there was an embodiment of where we think we are going as an organization into our next 100 years, he is an embodiment of that future, the vision's tagline to see what is possible. So he is an embodiment of see what is possible and a very inspiring speaker. So for him alone and many other reasons, get your ticket.
I mean, I love that. That's really incredible. That must be a terrific person to listen to, that they could overcome such obstacles.
Absolutely. We're really excited.
Are there other honorees that you're having, or is it really focused on the keynote?
No, I would be absolutely remiss if I didn't highlight our two honorees. So, as I said, we want to spread acknowledgement of the centennial in our past, and we are honoring the amazing Bert and Harriet Strauss. Bert's been involved with the board for more than 40 years. Bert's grandmother was one of the six women that founded Visions in 1926. And his mother was involved. He's been involved. Their daughter has been involved. So we are honoring his incredible commitment to the organization. And then, kind of in the spirit of our present, the Pied Piper of UPS, the amazing Jim Holland. So Jim is somebody who's been at UPS in a senior leadership role. He has been blind since childhood, and he has been involved in our campus, in our 37-acre facility up in Rockland County, that where we do programming for individuals. He and his team have been providing in-kind expertise, technology, wiring services for years. And so we really wanted to lean in and honor him and his commitment.
That's fantastic. How do you go about getting most of your funds? I mean, I assume fundraising has to be critical, but are there other really key components to your budget?
So I would say, in a nutshell, we certainly depend on fundraising, and we also get contracts from the state, the New York Commission for the Blind. We get city contracts to support the Older Adult Center from the Department for the Aging. And we also are fortunate to have an endowment. And so we draw some
Great.
funds down from the endowment. I've been in a lot of nonprofits. We're in a more a stable position, but we're looking to really revitalize our campus up in Rockland. So that's the focus of some of our centennial fundraising.
Well, that's great. I mean, listen, I know how important it is for nonprofits, and a lot of times, you fill up one pot, but then it empties, and you have to figure out other opportunities to raise funds. And I'm sure you have quite a substantial overhead given all the services and footprint that you have.
Oh, for sure. And just an increasing demand. That's what we're really looking to cover for the future.
Interesting. Well, speaking of the future, I mean, I'd love to, ask you a last question is, what is the future? I mean, the organization been around 100 years. How are you thinking about it into the future?
I think, in a nutshell, the next century is really about expanding our impact without losing our heart. So we are, as you heard earlier, the demand is growing for these services. And as people understand what the services are about and how it helps them stay connected to their communities and living the lives they want, we want to be able to be available to a bigger group of people who are starting to lose their vision to get involved with us earlier and be more prepared for vision loss. And so that's really the idea for the future, is more services provided to broader groups of people that need us and earlier in their vision journey. So that's what we're looking to do. Again, up at the Rockland campus, we can do a lot of things up there. It's a beautiful facility that needs some work, and we're looking to do that to serve people across New York State and beyond on the East Coast.
That's fantastic. Well, Molly, it's been a pleasure talking to you, getting to know you better, and really the whole mission of Visions, which is truly incredible. And congratulations on the centennial.
And Josh, if people out there are listening and need help, I would say the easiest way is to email us at info@visionsny.org. info@visionsny.org. If you need to work with us, we'd love to work with you.
Thank you so much, Molly.
Thanks, Josh.